Italian Wine Podcast. Cin Cin with Italian Wine People.
Hello, this is the Italian Wine Podcast with me, Monty Walden. My guest today is Roberto Di Filippo from the Di Filippo Winery in Canara in Umbria in central Italy. Welcome, Roberto.
Oh, thank you.
I'm extraordinarily excited to have you here today.
Me too.
And hopefully during the interview we'll find out why I am so excited. So just give me a little bit of family history. You run the winery with your sister?
Yes, me and my sister, and my family started almost 50 years ago. Yes, me and my sister started later. And the name is Elena. Elena is my wife.
Yeah.
Emma is my sister, sorry. And anyway, we started in the 70s, and early 70s, planting the first vineyard, and I started to work into the winery in the 86.
So that was your father, your parents? Was it your dad or your mum who started the winery?
Yeah.
What was your dad called?
Italo.
Italo.
Yeah,
okay.
Italo, my mama, and then Pina, Giuseppa, Pina.
Giuseppina, okay. And when did you take over with your sister?
I started working in the 86, and we started the society, me and my sister, in the 2002.
So obviously you are an organic winery, and we're going to come on to how you actually work today. Was Italo, your father, was he organic or was he conventional?
No, he was conventional. I decided to start in the 1994, so a few years after I started to run into the winery.
Why did you go organic then?
At the time it was mainly for three reasons. First of all, because we are farmers and we are mainly in touch with the chemicals. It was because of our health problems. Secondary, because we are a small winery, and so we want to give some special product to the customers to pay more attention. Third, also, because we are in a town which has, strangely, a 9% of cancer, probably because we have a big color firm factories, and so they said, okay, we have to do something. And yeah, we had this factory in my town, in my village.
And what was it making?
Oh, making colors for ceramics. Colorful, with a lot of, you know,
lead.
So we have these problems. Anyway, so when you see around of you a lot of these problems, health problems, you say, okay, we have to do something. This is an active thing to do.
You went organic in around about 1994. And how has your organic farming changed since then? Because you're doing a couple of things that are very different and unusual.
Yeah, let's say in the beginning, you know, the main rule is very easy because you can just use organic stuff, so use forbidden the chemicals and everything. I've seen even the European rules, they have changed. They have limited the use of copper, for instance. And
copper is used to treat a disease, iron disease called peronospora or Downy mildew.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So it's the only way to fight against the peronospora, the poultry mildew. Okay. After years, we also started to introduce the biodynamic farming, which it means to use a lot of useful compost on the field, on the leaves. Also, we had a big problem with the soil compacting because, you know, this kind of agriculture, we use a lot of the tractors and we have a clay calcareous soil. So we decided to use also all the system which avoids the use of the tractors to respect much more the soil. So we started to use the draft horses into the soil, into the winery, and also to clean the vineyard that we introduced the geese.
Let's talk about the horses first.
Mm-hmm.
How many horses do you have at the moment?
Oh. Actually, nine.
Nine horses. How many hectares of vineyards do you have?
We have 30 hectares.
So that's about 70 acres, roughly.
Yes.
So that's a lot of horses. Actually, what is a fairly small vineyard. How do you stay financially viable?
Oh, let's see.
What are the economics of working with a horse? I'm Roberto, I think you're totally crazy.
Yeah.
Why don't you go back to using a tractor for everything? What are the economics?
Oh, let's say you're not the only one thinking that we are crazy. You know, normally, we are the freaky guys in this area running organically in 24 years ago, and nowadays with the horses. Anyway, let's say to work with the horses gives not just benefit on the soil. You can also save money if you calculate everything. Just for instance, when you clean the vineyards with a plow, I've calculated to pay roughly 200 euro by the tractor and about less than 150 with the horses.
So how does when you're saying with the tractor, the calculation that you're making is the fuel?
Yes.
And then the maintenance of the tractor throughout the year, so oil, oil changes, tires.
Even the people driving, the drivers also. I've calculated also the driver. So simply I have everything on my report, annual report. So I've calculated the cost per hour.
So for the to be fair, so for the cost for the horses, you're calculating the food that they need.
Yes.
The labor by looking after them, cleaning out the stables.
Yes, to clean the stables.
Insurance.
Yes.
Veterinary things. Insurance. New shoes. They have to be new shoes
every 2 months. Every 2 months we have to change it. We have to show the horses. Yes.
So and you're saying that it's still cheaper to work with a horse than it is with a tractor. A nice, comfortable tractor with a CD player in it, air conditioning.
Yeah, this is what I suppose. Okay, you can save money. By the way, let's say with the tractor, you switch off the tractor and you can have a glass of wine or beer with your friends. And with a horse, you have to take care about the horse the whole year. So you do that just if you're passionate about this kind of work. So I don't believe that we will have a lot of followers with the draft horses as we had with the organic farming 24 years ago. It's a good challenge and it works. It's a kind of provocation just to say sometimes the technology and the tractors are not so convenient as
But in terms of your bottom line, in terms of your economics, as far as you're concerned, and also by working with the horses, there's less compaction.
Yes.
Which is very important. We can talk about that. But still, your calculations are that you're actually saving money by working with the horses. What about the ethical side? You talk about ethical farming. In terms of the circulation of money staying in the community and leaving the community, what are the numbers on that, on those parameters, and why is that important to you to calculate those parameters?
Well, Monty, probably you are touching the most important point. When I say roughly that we pay 200 euro per hectare to clean with the plow with the tractor and less than 150, it is not just the quantity of money, it's also where this money remains. When I pay 200 euro with tractors, probably 80% they move away from the territory. When I pay 150 with the horses, probably more than 50% remains in the area. And that's very important, because one of the problem is that with agriculture is becoming poorer and poorer. Just the other business is much more important than agriculture. So tractors, industry, and fuel, and chemicals, and just sometimes only 5% remains in the farmer wallet. So we have to change something. You need an ethical, political, economical, and social will to bring to leave more money in agriculture.
So basically you're very much of the think global but act local philosophy.
Yeah. I told you that we have also not only winery here in Italy, also winery in Romania, and our philosophy was in any way to employ the local people. Even in Romania we choose not the industrial way to plant the vineyard. We employ the people in the area, and just to keep in touch with the most population, local population as possible. We do the same here in Italy, in Umbria. We employ local people, we train them, we keep the same people for years and years. We have a turnover very low, so sometimes we can lose maybe one employee on 30 every year. So it means that they are in a good condition. I hope they are happy.
Do they appreciate your economics when they arrive for work? Obviously they know they're working in an organic vineyard which isn't being sprayed with systemics and neurotoxins, but are they just happy that, oh listen, we work for this guy Di Filippo, he's a bit of a crazy guy, he's a classic organic, he's got a beard, he looks a bit scruffy, we don't care, we go out in the vineyard, we get paid, we go home, we go to the supermarket, we buy our dinner? Or do they know that you have this philosophy, and do they appreciate that?
Yeah, they appreciate. Probably, let's say, a lot of people who are working with us are the same crazy mentality. So we have a crew of freaky guys. That's not true. We are mainly normal people. And let's say they feel to be more involved in agriculture and what we are doing. Because we make a lot of, for instance, pruning training and also agriculture training and biodynamic training. And now we are going to make also draft horse training. So we learn how to drive the carriage and the tools.
So you're teaching them skills, basically?
Yeah.
You're giving them life skills or skills?
Yeah, it's very important to make a team building and also to make them to feel to be more involved in what we are doing. For sure, it is not easy, because everybody wants to create their own corner. Maybe one day they do not like the horses, okay, well, don't use the tractors. And because we have a lot of animals, it's very complex, and sometimes the geese, they eat the grapes, and so say, oh, take away this bad animals. And it is not easy, but my effort is to make them to understand that we have to change something. Because if I follow the mainstream streaming, I should fire 50% of my employees. So it's...
But you have a huge risk as well. I mean, I know, you know, if you think about all these employees, my partner's an accountant, she does financial accounting for agricultural businesses, and everybody's terrified of having too many employees because they can't get rid of them. Yeah. So that's why the system, obviously labour protection, which is obviously not a bad thing, but one of the reasons why I think all agriculture has become so reliant on machinery and technology is because we've undervalued the human aspect.
Yeah, this is one of the important points, and I'm for sure we are going against the mainstreaming because, you know, we are investing in all this technology, geese and horses, which means to save material resource, so petrol or metals, but we have to invest on human resource. So it's the contrary. So, the people are scared to employ more people. So everybody also around my territory are investing on new technology which allows to save any minutes of labor into the vineyard. And say, this is crazy. We are just 2% of people in Europe working in agriculture. In the States, we are like, they are like 1%, and the result is low quality agriculture, desertification of fields, chemicals, and blah and blah, and health problems. I say, let's make one step back, not like 100 years ago, to employ 60% of people in agriculture, but we can move from 2% to a 4, 5, 6% in order to have a better quality of food, agriculture, territory, and also save material resource.
Do you think also the physical aspect? I mean, I've worked in vineyards, and it is hard work, but at the end of the day, you do feel tired at the end of the day, but you get an incredible amount of exercise. And actually, I found when I used to come home from working in a vineyard all day long, my mind was incredibly active. If I come home from working in an office, I just, you know, you want to sit, flop on the sofa and put the TV on and just switch off. Is that important, the physical activity and mental health, or a link between the two?
Yeah, there is a connection. And unfortunately, I do not work so much into the fields and with the horses as I wish. But for sure, when you're working physically, you take care also about your body. You feel much better. You can work better. I don't know if I got your answer.
That's okay. Yeah, so. A typical day, so if you wake up and you know that you've got to get the horses ready, you know, they're in the stable. So between getting them from the stable into the vineyard, how long does that take?
The management is okay. When I'm in a lucky day and I can afford to work with the horses, okay, I wake up, I go to the horse and I pick up the horse with the launch, and we brush him just to take away some ground and something. We dress it, and then we take about 15-20 minutes by sulky, because we have the sulky plow, to go into the vineyard. Some other time when it is close to the vineyard, it takes only 5 minutes, and then we work about 2 hours, 2 and a half hours. This is the schedule in the morning, and 1.5-2 hours in the afternoon.
So they work a maximum of 4 or 5 hours a day?
Yeah, depending on the kind of work. So you can see the horses when they are tired, and then you stop, because when they are really tired, they are not so able to go straight ahead. So they start to swing.
So some people would say, oh, you know, a horse would be just happy staying in its stable, you know, turning on the DVD, the TV, having a bit of hay to eat, and without going out and doing all this work stuff in the vineyard with
No. They prefer to move. When they are in the stable for weeks and weeks, you can see they are nervous, they need to move, and they appreciate to work with us because we do not ask them too much. Okay, we know when to stop. So the physically, the horses, they have to move. The worst horse is the one who stays months and months in the stable or in the paddock. And, so it's very important to create this link with the horse, with the animals. Don't forget that the horse is an extraordinary sensitive animal. And so they pick up your mood immediately. You also understand them. You have to be, when you are working with the horses, you have to be in a good mental and physical condition, because they immediately understand if you are in a bad condition, okay? Simply with your body language, with your aspect and with your movements. And so it's they are a kind of mirror. It is not a mirror. It's not like a tractor. You have the mirrors in the tractor, but in another way. And so it's very important to, it changes completely your mentality, your life. And I try to move the other guys working with the tractors in my winery. I want to make them to know the horse labor, which is different. And I hope that I will be able to move them, because now the problem is that we have the double technology, horses and tractors, because you cannot abound immediately. So we have also the double cost. So we made the research, we have built up the tools, and we are sustaining both. And we didn't get any funds from Italy.
Did you make your own tools for the horses?
Yes, we did. I'm a winemaker, enologist, but few of the people, they believe it, because I'm able to also to weld, to make the tools and to project. And okay, we have made the prototypes, and now we are working with a professional artisanal laboratory just to build professional tools. And but we had our ideas. I traveled a lot also in the States. I was in touch with the Amish people, and also with the French people in France. They have a wonderful tools for the horses and for the vineyards, probably the best.
So you're saying that going to see the Amish in America, because they work with horses, about 200,000 Amish, I think, in America. So they have still these tools that are tried and tested, the design of them for ploughing the soil. It's not just one plough, you have several different ploughs for different jobs.
Yeah.
So you're saying that they are sort of quite avant-garde, they're quite ahead in terms of their technology, their plough technology.
They have a wonderful technology. I've seen some amazing tools. Okay, they do not have tools for vineyards. I haven't seen, because they have not vineyards. They do not drink alcohol. Okay, they say that, but some of them, they drink. Anyway, I've seen some wonderful ploughs, hybrids with a hydraulic system to lift, and it was completely made by this Amish. And they have also a big advantage, because they produce not few units like in France or Italy, but they produce hundreds, so they have a lower cost, and probably you pay one third or a quarter than Italy or France
for a tool to go with the horse.
Yes, absolutely.
Tell me about the geese. You mentioned geese and permaculture. So explain, why would you have geese in your vineyard? How did that all come about?
Okay, the Easter is it is nice, because all these projects was born almost 10 years ago, okay, 8, 9, talking with a friend of mine. He's a researcher, Adolfo Rosati. Now he's studying, researching a lot in agroforestry. So chatting, we were thinking about all the system to do not compact the soil. So to plow into the vineyard, we are using to till the vineyards. We are working with the horses, and then he told me, okay, to keep clean with the weed, take a look on the internet and look for weeding with geese. You can find a lot of things about the American people's cleaning the cotton crops with the geese, or in Japan and China, they use the ducks to clean the rice crops. And I started to study also how many geese you have to keep on the vineyards, which is about 40 per acre.
And 40 per acre?
Yes.
That's 100
per hectare. Yes. It is very interesting, because in the beginning was just to keep clean. After that, I discovered, and also Adolfo, we discovered the agroforestry, which is an old term born in the 70s, which means to join together two kind of crops. In the former time, it was concerning just one orchard, for instance, paired with a barley or legumes, and you have a synergies. The second crop, keep clean the orchard, or you can also add nitrogen with legumes, and you have the double production, and you can increase also 40% the total production.
So basically, the orchard is producing fruit by growing nitrogen-fixing legumes between the trees. You can harvest them and eat them, and they leave nitrogen, they suck nitrogen out of the atmosphere, put it in the soil, and then the trees can use that nitrogen to grow their next crops. It's a very efficient efficient economical way of getting two crops on one piece of land.
Yeah, so it's all the new technology. You have to core this whole technology and upgrade within modern knowledge. We have a lot of agroforestry now. Nowadays, it means also to join not only two crops, but also one crop and one breeding. We are using the geese into the vineyard, but here we have experience also in Umbria with the hens into the olive trees, olive plants.
So what are the geese doing? Are they just running around or are they actually doing any work?
They are the best employees. No payments, you know, no unions.
No unions, no pension plan.
Nothing against the unions, but okay. And they clean, they eat the grass, they fertilize, and we have the double production. We increase a lot the quality of the soil because we have a lot of much more than microorganisms. And
from
their
manure.
Important. Yeah, it's very important.
So how many geese per hectare?
We have roughly 100 geese.
So that's about 40 per acre.
Yeah, that's right. This is the pressure of animal per hectare, per surface, you can afford. If you have too much animals, then you have also damages on the vineyards.
They
if
start
have,
eating the leaves and the grapes.
Yeah, they can. Yeah, no. Then you can keep them away in certain periods when you have the new sprouts.
The young shoots sprouting.
You have to keep them away, and then also when you have the grapes and during the maturation, and it means in August, you have to move away. And so there is also technology. It's a way to keep clean the vineyards instead of to use the chemicals, the herb or machineries. We are moving also from the mechanical and chemical agriculture to the knowledge agriculture. You can keep clean with the geese or also with the hens. Simply you have to know how to manage it. Also with the chemicals there is a knowledge, but the knowledge is owned just a few industries which produces the chemical molecules to clean it.
So it's very they have the patent of, and they know how the rest of the chemical formula is formulated.
Yeah.
So they have you're saying they have the knowledge, a small group of people, whereas in your type of farming, anybody that works in your vineyard will have the knowledge of, or should gain the knowledge of how to work with the geese, how to work with the horses, how
you
to look after them.
They have to coordinate each other, and they have to understand and also be patient because, when you have the geese and you have to enter with the tractor to spray the treatments, and the geese manager, has to move away in the day for a couple of days the geese, so they have to communicate. So it's a kind of complex
interaction
between the animals and the people taking care about the horses and the animals. Also the guys using the tractors, they have to use only few rows, only one row and two, because when you compact the soil with the tractor, it's very difficult, it's very hard to work with the horses. So the main rule, where do you enter with the horses, it is not allowed to enter with the tractor.
So how do you do that? So if you have, say you have 9 rows of vineyard, how many rows will only ever get the tractor and how many rows will only ever get the horses?
It's 3 for the tractors and 6 for the horses.
So they always stay the same. So there's always, we would say, 1 driving row, and then 2 non-drive, 2 horse rows, 1 driving row, 2 horse rows.
Yeah, so that just means one, we call them 1 compacting row and 2 respecting rows.
So the compacting row, each on either side of the tractor row, will have soft soil with the horses.
Yeah.
Okay. So it won't soften too much.
We are using a special sprayer, opening with the wings and then spraying 3 rows at a time. So it means we are using also technology. We do not refuse technology, absolutely. We try to modulate technology and also new and old technologies, because also using horses could be a modern technology. So we can use also the Wi-Fi just to open the gate of the geese in the morning, and also to have the camera. So the guys taking care about the geese, they can also control by smartphone. Why not? What to refuse this kind of technology? They can save a mileage with their car instead of to move every moment with the car into the stable of the geese. So we are simply to record this. Sometimes it's very cheap. cheap technology throughout the daily life.
To minimize environmental impacts.
Yeah.
So basically you're saying you're combining the best of modern technology in terms of saving time and saving fuel and not burning energy,
yeah,
and trying to keep as much money in the local community as possible.
Yeah, this is the target. And I told you, this is absolutely against the mainstreaming because, you know, I make also provocation. I say, maybe I'm a farmer, I'm stupid. I do not understand why you're trying to save labor and we are investing more and more in the material resource and we are 7 billion, only 1 billion is working, and maybe we have 2 or 3 billions of unemployed people
on the planet,
and we are making wars for the petrol, for the metals and everything. So it means maybe we have to make this freaky step back.
Okay, so there is definitely an ethical, there's an environmental aspect, and there's an ethical aspect. But it's really based, you're saying it's based on logic. It's not based on any weird philosophy, or it's based absolutely on logic and a lot of economics as well.
Yeah, so we try to keep the feet on the ground. And to be, it's the same in English, I'm happy to hear that. Anyway, I want to feel myself a farmer. I'm not a philosopher, as I told you before, and I appreciate philosopher, farmer, like Fukuoka or like Steiner, and so we have to practically work daily and use our mind. It's much easier to recover, to collect a lot of information with the internet, with the net. We have to use it also because we are making a rare kind of agriculture, so we have to keep in touch and create a net for the few crazy farmer doing things like that, and to exchange the idea for instance is to create these new tools and to put all the project on internet.
So you're not developing things just for you. You're saying, listen, I've designed this plow, or
yeah,
I'm doing this thing with my geese.
I want to make a kind of PDF or something like that, so anybody can download the project. Maybe they are in Austria or in South Africa, they can copy it. And the idea is to make a kind of a Linux of the horse working tools, so they can download, upgrade, and upload with the other things. So just to modify, we are really few people doing that. So we have to keep in touch, and we have a powerful tool like the net, and we have to use it.
So you're saying you're not patenting what you're doing. You're saying, listen, I'm doing this. This worked for me. I'm sharing my knowledge. I'm giving it away for free. Mm-hmm. And you're very happy that people say, oh yeah, the geese thing sounds interesting, I'll try that.
Yeah.
He says, right, 40 geese per hectare. 50 geese is too many per hectare. 30 maybe not quite enough. So you're giving it away for free.
Maybe if you're in Holland or in North Italy, you have more rain.
Yeah.
So you can have also more geese. So you say, okay, in Italy, in Holland, you can keep also in an orchard under 50 geese. This is what we have to say. And we have also to value the animals we are producing, because we have a lot of benefits. Also on the meat, on the eggs, you know, all the feeding is mainly by grass, 80%. So they have much more healthy fat like the omega-6.
You're saying the quality of the goose meat is much better because they've been eating green plants rather than eating pellets.
Yeah, that's very important because, you know, in modern disease like cancer, Alzheimer's or heart disease, the main reason seems to be this low quality fat like the omega-6. So we have to change the how to breed animals.
So aerobic exercise in the vineyard, healthy meat from the geese in the vineyard, and you can eat them, and a free-range goose that's been eating what it normally would eat in the wild, green grass, is going to be a healthier dinner than goose that has never seen the sunlight.
Probably it's everything we are producing seems to be healthy and organic and biodynamic. I say just my life looks to be not really organic, because you can imagine, Monty, that we, with all this project, these things, is very complex. I need a good thing with me. Fortunately, I have a good horse trainer like Daniele, and also and a passionate guy like Marco taking care about the goose, and wonderful people also in Romania, and otherwise it's impossible to manage such kind of project.
You haven't really talked about your wines, but let's talk. You do make some no added sulfite wines, like Grechetto,
we did it. It's a new challenge for me.
So I tried there are a lot of no added sulfite wines out there, and I don't want to get into too many polemics, I'd like to. I could spend 4 hours going into polemics. But ultimately, my view on no added sulfite wines is they're delicious when they're made with really top quality grapes, and the winemaker knows what he or she is doing. the two best nomadic sulfite wines I've ever had, and one of them was with you a couple of days ago. Both of them have come from horse ploughed vineyards.
Yeah.
One of them came from the Longolot, a wine grower called Bernard Bellazan from Tunisia. He grew up with horses when he was a kid, and he has a horse ploughed vineyard, and you're the same. Mm. I'm sure there's a link there somewhere. How do you make your no added sulfite wine? Because you don't just pick the grapes and ferment them. You have a real plan before you make your no added sulfite wine, and that's why it tastes clean and fresh, and nobody would ever guess that it was a no added sulfite wine. It was delicious. How do you make it?
Oh, it's very important to have an excellent grape. And so they come from the no sulfite Grechetto, the Trebbiano Spoletino, and the top of the Grechetto wine from the no tractors vineyard.
So they both okay. So it's two grape varieties, Trebbiano Spoletino,
yeah,
and Grechetto. So they both come from horse ploughed vineyards.
This small production, it means they are only maybe 10,000 bottles. Totally, they come from 4 hectares. Yes, there is a link. It is not easy to prove because we should make different training in a different plot. And so anyway, let's say my feeling is that we have much more complex soil and also wonderful quality of grapes, low production. And so we have a really powerful grapes and grapes rich of aroma and complexity. And so this is very important for a no sulfite wine.
Because you pick the grapes. So basically they have very good physiological ripeness and analytical ripeness. So you get the numbers, the sugar levels, and you get the flavors. So you pick them by hand, you stick them in a press.
Yes, we try to save comunque, anyway, to keep away the grapes and the juice from the oxygen. So we use also a tin of carbonic gas during the pressing. Okay.
And so there you go again, that's classic. Your old fashioned goose farmed vines, you're in the medieval era, then you get the grapes in, you're using
technology.
Yeah,
we do.
Okay.
No, I told you, we do not refuse technology. We want to, when we need, we use it.
Okay.
Then we have the completely biodynamic protocol, so natural cleaning, and then we use the wild yeast for the fermentation.
So you press, you get the juice. So the juice goes into the tank for the white wine, mm-hmm. and it starts fermenting on its own with wild ambient yeast.
Yeah, it takes a long period, you know, because with the wild yeast and also because the Grechetto is very difficult to be fermented. Anyway, my mentality for the no sulfite wine is because we refuse the chemical protection against mainly oxidation, we need a powerful wine. So if you have a good aroma heritage, you can keep the wine longer. And also if you lose a part of the aroma because of the oxidation, you still have a pleasant wine. If you have a weak wine and you lose the aroma, you have just water and alcohol. And wine is unpleasant.
So, okay, so you've pressed it, you've got the juice, it goes into tank, it ferments with wild yeast. Mm-hmm. And then what do you do? How long do you leave it on its lees? Do you just leave it on the gross lees, the thick lees formed by fermentation?
We leave on the thick lees at least for 6 months. This is very important because the lees, the quality lees, are the natural protection against the oxidation. And also you make the wine much more complex. We use the lees for many, many months. When we stop to use the lees for the white wine, we move the lees on the red wines, just because I told you it's a natural protection against the oxidation. Also, it's a way to make the wine more complex.
So you recycle the lees into the red.
Yeah.
You're saying that for the white wine, you leave it on gross lees, but then you rack it and it will still form some lees. You don't want to leave it on the gross lees too long. Why not?
Because the gross lees, I think the rough lees you see are saying, the gross lees are stinking. You have to move away the gross lees, because they are not just lees. They are lees and also part of skins and wood and everything, and it is really a bad smell. So you have to make your enological labor. You have to be an enologo.
So again, your technological side. So you decide when the moment is to rack off, where the lees could start making the wine turn stinky and eggy. You say, right, we'll rack off the wine, mm-hmm. and we can recycle those lees into a red.
Yeah.
Not throw them away to give the red a little bit more food. Mm-hmm. And then you take the white wine, and then what happens to it? Does it settle again before you bottle it or not?
Yeah, and we do not filter it. About the gross lees, it is not difficult to separate them. Simply, we move them away before the fermentation. So you have to keep it to rest, because if you have the gross lees during the fermentation, you have a bad smell, especially the broad aroma.
Okay, let's do that again. So basically, so you press, mm-hmm. you put the juice in a tank,
okay.
you let it settle, then what happens?
Normally, it's 1 or 2 days.
Okay.
And for the no sulfite wine, because we want to use only the biodynamic protocol, we let them to settle down. With the Agrocricchetto, we use the flotation system, which is also technology, but in a small quantity, means to keep away also the oxygen from the juice. So it's also a natural way to keep away the wine from the oxygen instead of to use the sulfites. So it's a way to, depending on the wine, to use different technologies. But at the end, I'm a winemaker. I'm a 30 years experienced winemaker, and it should be my main job.
Okay, so for the no added sulfur wine, you press the Grichetto, for example. You get the juice into a tank.
Okay.
You let it settle for a couple of days.
Yeah.
And then you rack it off the gross lees, the thick sludge. Why do you rack it off the gross lees, the thick sludge?
Because the gross lees, they have often a bad smell, sulfur and also broad, and so you have to move it away. Especially you have to move it away before the fermentation.
Okay, so you ferment with fairly clean juice, a little bit turbid, but not thickly turbid.
Not really perfectly clean. Yep. It will be, especially the Grichetto, which is very tough to clean, it isn't a problem if it is a bit cloudy, okay?
A bit cloudy,
Cloudy, yeah.
So then you ferment that in another tank?
Yes.
And how do you, and so after fermentation, obviously there's still carbonic gas around. Are you using that to protect the wine naturally so that you don't have to add sulfites?
No, we use also, we keep the wine for some months, and we move, okay, the lees every week.
So you keep clean, so this, it's very important, you keep making sure the wine is still fairly clean, it's not getting too turbid and stinky.
Okay. And then we also keep under the nitrogen for some months. It helps.
So technology again, so a mix of technology and common sense.
It helps.
And then you bottle it.
Yeah, even because you need it on the Grichetto, because the Grichetto is very tough. You have easy oxidation because, you know, the Grichetto has a lot of catechins, and the catechins, they have an easy oxidation, and also you can have bitter tests after testing, and also bitter aroma. So it's very important to keep away the Grichetto from the oxidation. It's very important also to have a soft pressing, because if you press too much, then you extra too much color and too much catechins, and also a lot of bitterness and a bad smell.
Okay, so anybody that's listening to this, you have to trust me on this. If you want to have an absolutely textbook example of how to make a white wine with no added sulfites, it's absolutely delicious. It's got texture, it's savory, it's intense, it's balanced, it's got varietal typicity, it's got terroir typicity, and it's very, very clean and clear, and with an incredibly vibrant mouthfeel. You have to try this wine, trust me. This is a model of how to make no added sulfite wines, which taste absolutely fantastic, that do not taste like horse stables or goose droppings or whatever. Trust me on this. You just have to believe me, okay?
Yeah.
I'm now working as his PR agent. It was just signed a really very important contract.
The problem, we produce just 3,000 bottles of Grichetto.
That's okay. 3,000 will be enough. You know, any sommeliers who have big responsibilities in top restaurants, your job is in a restaurant. The chef has to know what he's doing in terms of science, In terms of public health, because you can't get away with bad cooking in a restaurant and poison people. I'm not saying they're going to do that with wine. Trust me on this. This is an absolute example of how to do it properly. So are you optimistic about the future? When I meet people like you, you know, you inspire, because you are blending the advantages of modern technology, and there are labour-saving advantages, energy-saving advantages with technology. Plus, you're working with animals, and I think that has an incredible impact, a beneficial impact on mental health, human mental health, by working with animals. So there's that aspect. You're adding to biodiversity, you're adding to your rural community by your investment in people, trying to recycle money locally, think global, act local. You're ticking all the boxes. What else could you do? What else do you think you could do? Is there any other ideas you've got in your head, Roberto, where you think, you know what, I'm doing this with the animals, no ploughing, organic biodynamic. What else, what would be your next step? Is there anything that you're missing?
We are doing a lot. What we have to do also, we have to communicate it. Also because I think there are a lot of people, the majority of the people are looking for that. I'm also optimist on the peoples, and especially on the young peoples. When you train them and when you show how we are working, they catch immediately the sense, and they change their mentality. So I trust a lot, especially on the young peoples, on their passions. I see they have a lot of energy. When they put all their passion, I steal in some way their positive energies. So it is very important to work with schools and university. So we also often university, not only from Italy, also from all around the world. We have universities from Holland, partner from the United States, I guess from UK in the next times. For me, it means also to pay something, to spend my time with the students. But we have to do that because this is the future. Otherwise, if you do not see it as a farmers on the young people, we cannot harvest positive things in the next years.
The communication and letting people know what you're doing is very important. So yeah. That I agree with you about this being the future.
Yeah.
I think it seems old-fashioned, but it's not. There's a logic behind it. And you're blending the best of modern technology with traditional practices that make sense for environment and for also our personal environment, our mental health and our physical health. Thanks very much indeed, Roberto, for coming in and telling us about the Di Filippo Winery in Umbria. Anybody that's into organic, biodynamic, natural wine, no added sulfite wine, anybody that likes geese or horses, this is your destination of choice, or should be. That's the Italian Wine Podcast. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Follow Italian Wine Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.